to know why we are being stopped.
Exactly.
So, for example, in my case, when I understood I'm overthinking, I could help myself. When I understood that I am procrastinating, I can find some solutions to get out of it. But, oh, God forbid the time that we don't know what the matter is, what the problem is. That's
yeah,
crazy.
Exactly. When we don't know and we're just neglecting things mm-hmm. with no reason, this is worse even. Well, let's go for the last breakout today, and then we're going to be back by some solutions now that we just nagged and complained a lot from the beginning of the problems that will hold us back in life. Let's go for this break, and then we're going to find some solutions as well.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back with today's episode. We were talking about things that hold us back in life. So we named lots of them.
Indeed.
How should we change?
For me, first step was knowing the problem,
yeah.
which... If we
for
overcome,
everything, I mean,
yes.
acknowledging that there is a problem is the
yes.
most important part.
When you understand the problem and then you can solve it, I think we need to take steps. It can be, now this is the era of knowledge. You have
right.
everything under your fingertips. Just give it a search, read some articles. Of course, be very much sure what you're reading is correct information and not just a bunch of
yeah,
words.
Right.
And then if you have some wise friends around you or some teachers that you trust or someone maybe in your relatives who's knowledgeable, yes, a therapist, if you trust them, just go for it. Ask questions from others, wise people, and make changes in your life.
Yeah, and the other thing is that we can also start a change from inside. I mean, I'm not saying that we shouldn't talk to other people, we shouldn't consult.
Mm-hmm.
No, that is never the thing that I want to mention. What I'm after is that once we go inside ourselves, we open our eyes to the truth, we acknowledge that there is a problem, and then we look around. What am I surrounding myself with? Am I surrounding myself with a phone, with the internet, with the technology,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just postponing everything because of those reasons? You know how media and social
yes.
media affects? I'm not going to be that person, so I'm not going to do it. Those role models, fake role models that we're seeing, I mean, from inside, from the very personal spot, we can see the places that we are making the mistakes in, the places that we want to be, what we can't.
When you said inside, I remember this verse from Surah Ar-Ra'd, verse 11 in Quran we have, indeed, Allah will not change the condition of a people until they change what is in
yeah.
themselves.
So true.
So the first, I think, one of the most important stages is to change yourself within. And of course, Allah is there to help you.
Yeah, and the other thing that will start is rooted from inside, is looking around. As I said, we have to be aware of the people that are surrounding us.
Very
this
important.
Is our life, and
mm-hmm.
this is the only one limited time that we have on this world. So we can look around, we can see what kind of people am I in touch with. So those people can decide, those people can have impact on the way that I'm acting.
Yes.
As Imam Sadiq alayhi salam had mentioned, avoid the lazy and hopeless, for they spoil your work.
Indeed.
See how they're going to spoil your work, they're going to ruin whatever you're doing without you knowing that this is going to happen in your life. So also being aware of the people that are around us can help. So what else, what other things can help us?
I think those few points are more than enough if we do them.
Yeah, that's the point.
Yes.
We usually name like 100 things.
Yes.
And then when it comes to practice, they even get harder.
Yeah, they get harder. Like those simple little words.
Now I'm on the chaos of choosing which one to go for. So
I'm going to go for it changing inside and then worshiping, asking
yeah.
Allah to guide me, and then changing my environment as much as I can.
Exactly, so true. So choosing the right path depends on the way that I'm looking at myself. I'm looking at my problems
mm-hmm.
and the way I'm looking inside. And with the wish that you will find the best way that works for you to... first of all, we hope that none of our listeners is going to have this kind of problems that will hold them back. But in case we do, since we're all human beings and
yes.
we do have problems and places that we need to work on, with the wish that the strategies you choose will work the best for you, we will end today's episode. Until the next time that we're together, we wish you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you dear youth will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa
barakatuh. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
With the fall of Bashar al-Assad, a fleeting wave of hope swept across Syria. For a brief moment, many believed a better future was within reach. But those dreams quickly dissolved. The new dawn proved a mirage. Instead of renewal, Syria plunged deeper into crisis. I'm Ali Reza Akhtiarzadeh, and this is In a Nutshell. Power fractured, Israel seized the moment. Exploiting the chaos, it launched hundreds of strikes across Syrian territory and quietly expanded its footprints in the south. In the 2 days following Assad's overthrow, Israel carried out more than 500 airstrikes, targeting both military and civilian infrastructure. Since then, it has been occupying swaths of Qunaitra and Dara'a under the banner of preventing extremist threats. Since Assad's fall, Israel's military presence has evolved from opportunistic incursions into a strategic project, one aimed at reshaping southern Syria to fit its security and economic map. From Qunaitra to Jabal al-Sheikh, also known as Mount Hermon, Israeli forces have entrenched themselves along key highlands, water basins, and energy corridors. The new balance of power in the Levant increasingly revolves around two words, water and gas. Jabal al-Sheikh, the highest peak in the region, stands as the crown jewel of this expansion. At 2,814 meters, it offers an unrivaled surveillance hub, giving Israel a panoramic view from Damascus to the Mediterranean and deep into Iraq, Jordan, and Lebanon. To the southwest, Israeli forces have fortified Qunaitra, extending their reach to within 20 kilometers of central Damascus. New positions in Rahla, opposite Lebanon's Baqa Valley, now oversee three key routes linking Damascus to Beirut and Baalbek, effectively giving Israel a hand on Syria's western gateways. In Soweida province, Israeli influence is spreading under the guise of supporting the Druze. Following the July 2024 formation of the so-called National Guard, a 3,000-strong Druze force reportedly funded by Israel, Tel Aviv's reach deepened. Netanyahu's public pledges to protect the Druze community signaled more than goodwill. They marked the birth of a semi-autonomous security zone loosely tied to Damascus. Beneath the rhetoric of security, however, lies a contest for control over energy routes and water reserves, the true currency of power in today's Levant. The revival of the long-stalled Qatar-Turkey gas pipeline has only sharpened these rivalries. Once blocked by Assad to protect Russian interests, the project roared back into life after his fall. In December 2024, Turkey's energy minister announced its potential restart once Syria stabilizes. For Israel, that's a red flag. A functioning Qatar-Turkey-Europe pipeline would undercut Israel's own East-Med pipeline ambitions, a direct challenge to its vision of becoming Europe's next gas supplier. Analysts at the Begin Sadat Center warn that this gas race pits two visions against each other. Ankara's dream of an Islamic energy corridor versus Tel Aviv's push for a Mediterranean one. Both see Syria as the crucial crossroads. But Israel's ambitions go beyond gas. Control of water, the lifeblood of the region, has become another front. Through its hold over the Yarmouk River basin and the Al-Wehda Dam on the Syrian-Jordanian border, Israel now wields a strategic lever over both Syria and Jordan. The Golan Basin alone provides nearly a third of Israel's agricultural water needs, and every step deeper into southern Syria secures that lifeline. From Jabal al-Sheikh to Dar'a, Israel's control of springs, rivers, and dams, including Banyas, Raqqat, and Al-Manitra, has turned southern Syria into a meticulously managed zone of influence. In this reshaped landscape, fertile lands once tilled by Syrian farmers are being eyed for Israeli agricultural expansion, their crops destined for regional markets. These same corridors, rich in water and soil, double as potential land routes for future pipelines stretching from the Persian Gulf to the Mediterranean or Turkey. The fall of Assad was supposed to bring about a bright season for Syria. Instead, it opened a new chapter of domination, one where Syria, fragmented and exhausted, has become a playground for power politics and expansionist ambitions. Israel's quiet conquest of the south is not just about borders, it's about resources, leverage, and rewriting the strategic map of the Levant.
You're maker of my breath, but never my faith, no never my faith, it's my voice. You may chain both my hands, but never my soul, no never my soul, it's my voice. You make out of my breath, but never my faith, no never my faith, it's my voice. You may chain both my hands, but never my soul, no never my soul, it's my voice. My voice. You may chain both my hands. soul, no, never my soul, it's my voice.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners, brothers and sisters all across the world. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. The program is Viewpoints. I am Atta, the host of this program. Tomorrow is Jamadi al-Sani III, the martyrdom anniversary of Lady Fatima al-Zahra. So that's why today's episode of the program Viewpoints is dedicated to the holy status of Lady Fatima al-Zahra in Islam and how women today can benefit from her teachings. For this purpose, I've invited two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sister Zainab and Shaykh Hussein. Sister Zainab, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, brother, and to all the listeners.
And Shaykh Hussein, assalamu alaikum to you.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
All right. First, historically speaking, so many women have been mentioned as holy figures in the history of religions. There are also some examples mentioned in the Holy Quran. In the Shia theology and ideology, the status of Lady Fatima al-Zahra, the respected daughter of Prophet Muhammad, also the wife of Imam Ali alayhi salam, is considered really, really high. Mm. She is considered as a heavenly lady, a lady who had a role both in safeguarding the religion of Islam and safeguarding the successorship of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Now, historically speaking, can you give us some details about the importance and the significance of this lady in Islam first, Shaykh Hussein?
Yes, it's a good question to start. Actually, the status and position of Lady Fatima al-Zahra in Islam in general and also in Shia in particular, as you said, is a unique one.
Yes.
In terms of the role that she had from the early days of Islam, we see her in the sometimes even in the battles in the background, helping and participating in the like, for example, the injuries and the wounded soldiers, taking care of them,
nursing as a nurse.
Yes,
that's right. Okay.
Yes, and also the Prophet himself. There is this saying from the Prophet of Islam, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, said that Fidaha Abuha or Ummu Abiha, Fatima took care of me like the way a mother takes care of her child.
A mother of the father.
Yes, okay. The mother of the father, in this sense. So, and also the level of respect that the Prophet showed to Fatima, salamullah alayha.
Yes.
Especially then, and I would say even now, is unique because people then would not expect a man to show such a level of respect to
a lady.
His own daughter. Like at that time, women, ladies did not have such social status that you stand up in front of them, especially if it is your own daughter. So, but the Prophet wanted to show people, it has different reasons. One of them was that he wanted to show them that this is a different daughter, this is a different personality, and also to tell them that the status of women in general
is
not what you think.
Even I've heard before her birth, there were some divine guidance for both Prophet Muhammad and Lady Khadija before the delivery of the child. So that's why I think that her life was short, you know.
Yes.
From 18 to 23, it's documented, not more than that, okay? But this short life of a lady had great impact up to today, you know. The mother of the imams, she is called, and this is really a high status considered for Lady Fatima al-Zahra. So, Sister Zainab, what was your first encounter with Lady Fatima al-Zahra when you knew her? I mean, how did you find her? How did you find her position in Islam?
Probably it would have been when I was reading about the Holy Prophet himself, because from that, there immediately came the love for the whole Ahlul Bayt, and obviously then especially for his daughter. But I was thinking about her, and I think especially, well, not just for us as Shia, I think the status she has for us Shia is so obvious in a sense. But I was thinking especially for people who are obviously outside of Islam. I'm thinking about women who are outside of Islam who have nothing like this. They have no role models like this. And I was thinking, this is it's so striking, some of the things she did, because I was just thinking today, You know, she was obviously when Imam Ali did not get successorship because he was busy preparing and then burying the Holy Prophet, and obviously successorship was done separately,
all
as
right.
we know.
Okay.
And she, even though she would have been also coming to the stage of being sort of early pregnant and then quite heavily pregnant,
all right.
obviously before her martyrdom,
yes.
she was going around and complaining about this and demanding justice for her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that even nowadays, for example, outside of the Islamic world, people will, and I've heard these comments that, oh, a pregnant woman is not capable of working properly.
All right.
There's something, so in the Western mentality, uh-huh. non-Muslim mentality, is still this thing, A, about women,
all right.
that women cannot have that sort of status, they're not as rational, they're not as intellectual,
mm-hmm.
they don't have the same capacity. And this is why the Western feminism thing came in.
That's right.
They didn't have Islam, so what could they do?
Mm-hmm.
But then, obviously, to think of a woman who is pregnant and who is carrying out all these very public duties, so
that's
just
right.
something that occurred to me today.
Okay. And that's it. So many ladies nowadays are, after their voices being heard all around the world, her famous sermons on that time, okay? When you look at the diction, when you look at the, we can say, literary level of these sayings and the sermons in the Arabic language, you find it really astonishing, okay? How a young lady on that time, maybe 18, maybe younger than that, okay, the mother of three children, can give such a lecture, such sermons, you know, at the times that, for instance, Prophet Muhammad is alone or Imam Ali is alone, okay? So this has been really astonishing, Sheikh Hussein.
Yes, true, especially the sermon of Fadakiyah,
mm-hmm.
which has actually been documented not by Shia only.
Yes.
There is this book, Balaghatun Nisa, the eloquent sermons of ladies.
Very good.
And in that, it has been documented. Also, other chains of narration, it's one authentic historical account that Lady Fatima al-Zahra delivered this sermon in the masjid.
Mm-hmm.
And beside the Arabic eloquence, like the depth of the teachings that are there, we're talking about Arabian Peninsula at that time.
Yes.
Women education is something close to taboo
mm-hmm.
before Islam and after Islam. You're astonished how they got time to learn this thing. Like, they were constantly, I was talking about the support that she showed to her father
yes.
throughout the years of prophethood. And they are not easy things. Like, those years, there were very difficult moments that normally people in the household, for example, they would raise some concern, they would protest, what kind of life is it that you have created for me? But then you don't see anything of this sort from Lady Fatima al-Zahra.
Uh-huh.
Not only that, she shows full support.
Yes.
And sometimes when you see that, not the Prophet, but maybe people around the Prophet, they start to break, she starts like encouraging them and telling
right.
them, no, this is something that we should continue.
Mm-hmm.
So we should not look at the moment that Islam is established.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about when Islam is starting early and nobody is there to help this seed growing. And then Lady Fatima al-Zahra starts his role from there and is pretty young at that time. And then the role that the sister said about her support for the
yes.
successorship of Imam Ali al-Islam, this is very important because I think this is relevant to the situation that we have sometimes
mm-hmm.
in political matters, is
uh-huh.
that people at that time, they had this, those people who wanted Imam Ali to be the successor.
All right.
Because we had some of them.
Yes.
A few of them.
Mm-hmm.
So they had this strong belief that it's hopeless.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is no use. They have done what they have done.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot change it.
All right.
Okay, because the majority of them, they were the elite of Quraysh at that time.
Mm-hmm.
They had some great things against Imam Ali alayhi salam because of the battles and everything. So they had this mentality that what would be the use if we start telling things? But then Lady Fatima al-Zahra teaches us that in moments like this in history,
yes.
if you remain silent and you don't raise your voice, people in later generations would have confusion and misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this was something normal. Everybody accepted.
All right.
But then she wanted to leave a stance in history that, no, this was not normal.
Okay.
Maybe I cannot change it now, but I want the later generations to know that this was not something that the Prophet wanted.
Mm-hmm.
This is very important. Now, if, for example, some people would say, What can we do for Gaza? Mm-hmm. We cannot do anything. We're hopeless.
All right.
But then raising your voice and leaving a stance in history that, no, think about some generations after us, when they look back in history, if they don't see any protest, if they don't see any voice raised against this situation, they would say, okay, maybe it was something normal. Maybe it was not as bad as other people claim. Mm-hmm. But if you leave a stance in history, at least it has this function, that the truth and justice will not be forgotten after generations in folds of history.
Okay, and this is really important, highlighted part of the life of Lady Fatima al-Zahra.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
And we know that sometimes we see that, for example, maybe the line of imamat or successorship to Prophet Muhammad up to now, up to Hazrat Hujjah, we can't say is safeguarded because of maybe this and that, or because of this holy war or that holy war, or because of the presence of figures like imams who were men, okay? And we forget absolutely the role of a lady over here, okay?
This is the status of motherhood.
The motherhood.
When we talk about motherhood, it's not just biologically speaking. This is ideologically speaking.
That's why
she safeguarded the role of the imams, and it has some spiritual connotation in it. That in Shia spiritual tradition, the role of the Lady Fatima al-Zahra, Laylatul Qadr.
Secret to Laylatul Qadr is Lady Fatima al-Zahra.
Because
Laylatul
Qadr was the vessel through which Quran was revealed to humanity, and Lady Fatima al-Zahra was the means through which the imams were given to humanity.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. And a nice comparison have been made, analysis between Laylatul Qadr and Lady Fatima al-Zahra. We do not understand what is Laylatul Qadr, as we do not know today where is the holy grave of Lady Fatima al-Zahra. And this has always been, a matter of concern for so many people. That's it. So, Sister Zainab, when we get to today's world, I mean, so many ladies might ask, okay, how to benefit from her character? In what aspects today's Muslims, especially a Muslima, can benefit from the teachings of Lady Fatima al-Zahra?
Well, I think maybe the first thing, and maybe, I don't know whether it's the most important one, but that is, especially nowadays, because we know that even all this, all the Muslim women, all the Shia women, everyone is to some extent influenced by what they see outside of the Islamic world, what they see in media.
Yeah.
And maybe they start to think that, oh, the value of women is greater elsewhere. Uh-huh. That's just this sort of strange thinking, oh, the grass is always greener somewhere else.
Yes.
It usually isn't.
Because
I've also heard that the grass is greener where you water it, mm-hmm. basically. But the really important thing, I think, for the women is to remember obviously the lofty status. And one of the aspects of this is that you always have to remember the lineage of the imams uh-huh. comes through a woman.
All
and
right.
this goes totally against anything that came before the advent of Islam, obviously in the Arabian Peninsula. Goes totally against the idea in the Western world, because lineage is always through the son, the oldest son, basically.
Uh-huh.
And here we have this very groundbreaking rule. This is the foundation that's established there. And then the other aspect, which is really important for the women to remember, is that, you know, typically we women are supposed to look at role models. Okay, so we look to this person to, you know, how we're supposed to behave as mothers, as wives, just as women in society.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they give us a role model as a lady role model. But this lady role model is a role model not just for women, but for the men.
For the men too, that's
men
right.
Men also look to Hazrat Fatima Zahra.
Yes.
So that is how important she is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, especially a sort of a, let's say, an intellectual understanding
mm-hmm.
of how elevated the status of a woman is. But we just find that in Islam, and particularly in the understanding in Shia Islam, of mm-hmm. course.
That's right. Okay. So, religiously speaking, when we look at her legacy, what do we find? which is with us today. For example, Tasbihat of Hazrat Fatima to Zahra, which is recited, you know, after Salat by the Shias, is one of them. What else do we have religiously speaking?
Yes, there are narrations from Lady Fatima to Zahra. And the sermon, Fadakir, that I said, is studied in Hawzat al-Amiyya, both in terms of the Arabic eloquence and also some lines of it are very deep, like, for example, because it talks about the philosophy behind the religion.
She was a hadith transmitter herself,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, okay. Yes. Okay. Actually, there are many, and also some of the things that she narrated is with the Imam of the time. It is Sahih Mus'haf Fatima, which is a secret thing that the A'imma would refer to in order to get their knowledge from.
Okay, there's a kind of book of secrets or something like that?
It's a kind of teachings. We believe that
that's
it is the interpretation of the Holy Quran.
Holy Quran,
that's
right.
Because in the Holy Quran, you have ambiguous verses, mutashabahat, and Quran itself says, Ar-rasikhuna fil ilm, only know the interpretation, true interpretation of them. So she has that role there. The other thing that I want to say is the nowadays we hear a lot about the women agency, like we should empower women to have agency and stuff like that. But what we see in reality is that our girls, the members of our ladies in our communities, it's not when the Western world talks about women agency, it's the influence of the media, of the movies, of the lifestyle that they want these ladies to follow. It's not agency.
It is weakening them rather than empowering them.
Yes,
okay.
Putting
that's
them
right.
in a constant competition of beauty and everything.
Yes.
So they actually lose their agency. But we see women agency in the life of Lady Fatima al-Zahra when everybody, almost everyone, was against her.
Mm-hmm.
But when she realized that something is true and correct, she did it. This is women agency.
With dignity and observing chastity. This is important.
Yes.
That's right.
So women agency is not in sexualizing, exposing herself. No. Women agency is to make a stance and leave track in history and becoming a role model. This is called women agency.
Very
not
good.
That we see nowadays here and there.
That's
and
right.
This is something that I think ladies in our communities should learn, that yes, sometimes, for example, you feel a lot of pressure. For example, to put hijab on. And there are lots of like gossiping here and there, people telling, making comments, toxic comments here and there. You should not lose your agency. If you realize that this is something that pleases Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, then you should do it, regardless of what people say.
This is
the lesson that we take from the life of Lady Fatima al-Zahra.
Okay, that's it. So the names Zahra and Fatima are the most popular names of the girls selected every year, not only by Shias, but also non-Shias all across the world, as the name of Muhammad and Ali are. And the case is that she is still remembered here and there, even among the Sunni brethren. Lady Fatima al-Zahra has such a great status, you know, when referring to her and the incidents that took place, you know, the son that she missed, Hazrat Muhsin, okay?
Yeah,
so, and still remembered in both literature, art, and the legacy of this holy lady is still very much awakening among all the Muslims all across the world. All right. Anything missed, Sister Zainab?
Yeah, I just add that, because I was just thinking, who are some of the people who, when I listen to them, when I watch them, somehow seem to be inspired by Zahra Fatima Zahra? And I was just remembering when I hear some of the speeches and I watch some of the ladies, so the wives of the martyrs, the daughters of martyrs, for example, I've really witnessed that inspiration from her.
Right.
So just coming through. So she is definitely, in a sense, her spirit, her status is very much alive in these women.
That's
sure.
right. Okay. The late Sheikh Azizullah Attarodi has a series of the books. One of them is Musnad Fatima al-Zahra, okay? A complete biographical, historical look at the lives of the infallibles, including Lady Fatima al-Zahra. So that's a complete book. Our dear listeners can refer to that book in order to be more familiar with this whole lady. But thank you very much, Sheikh Hussain and Sister Zainab, for a nice elaboration. Again, we express our condolences for Jamadi Uthani III, the martyrdom anniversary of Lady Fatima al-Zahra, and we express our condolences to all dear listeners, Muslims, especially ladies all across the world. Thank you very much for being with us with the program Viewpoints. If you have any question, if you want to visit more about our other programs, please visit our website at iranradio.ir. To another episode, God bless you all. Do not forget us in your supplications and duas. Fi amanallah.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
And the dark night lights up as you praise God. Your tears rain on your hijab and this cold air is filled with the fragrance of jasmine flower. Come and walk again in our troubled streets and lanes and heal the scars of our city with your sense of heaven. Oh, Fatima. At your door, and you give him your necklace and the only food in your home. You talk to God until the rising of the sun, and you forget yourself while praying. Everyone, come and walk again in our troubled streets and lanes and heal the scars of our city with your sense of heaven. Oh, Fatima.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن
by means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran, Quran.
Rabbana, Rabbana.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
Rabbana, Rabbana, ya Rabbana, ya Rabbana, ya Hayyu wa ya Qayyumu.
You are listening to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be looking at a very important topic, and that topic is related to the days that we are currently in. I am speaking, of course, of the Ayyam Fatimiyya, the days when we mourn the Lady Fatima and her martyrdom. As you know, tomorrow marks the anniversary of her martyrdom. For this reason, on behalf of IRIB English Radio and The Key, we would like to offer our esteemed listeners condolences on this very sad and momentous occasion. In connection with this topic, the question we want to pose today is, how did Imam Ali alayhi salam mourned the Lady Fatima? How did he express his grief for her? In order to answer this question, we can take recourse to a famous hadith which has been narrated. In this hadith, Imam Ali expresses certain things after he buried the Lady Fatima. When burying Fatima alayha as-salam, Imam Ali alayhi salam said this, O Prophet of Allah, he addressed the Prophet of Allah, his grave. Addressing it, he said, O Prophet of Allah, peace be upon you from me and from your daughter, who is joining you and who has hastened to meet you. O Prophet of Allah, my patience with the demise of your chosen one, meaning your daughter, has been exhausted, and my power of endurance has weakened. Except that I have ground for consolation in having endured the great hardship and heart-rending event of your separation. Meaning, you know, the separation from the Prophet was even greater than this. So the Imam is saying that I had experienced that and had prepared me for this sad event. I laid you down in your grave when your last breath had passed, when your head was between my neck and chest. Indeed, we belong to Allah, and to Him do we return. The Imam recited this verse of the Holy Quran, Inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un. Then he said, now the trust has been returned, and what had been given has been taken back. As to my grief, it knows no bounds, and as to my nights, they will remain sleepless till Allah chooses me for the house in which you are now residing. Certainly, your daughter will apprise you of the gathering of your community in oppressing her. You ask her in detail and get all the news about the situation. This happened when a long time had not even elapsed since your demise, and your remembrance had not ceased. My salutations be on both of you. The salutation of one grief-stricken, not a disgusted or hateful person. For if I go away, it is not because I am weary of you, and if I stay, it is not due to the lack of belief in what Allah has promised the endurers. These were some of the great words of Imam Ali alayhi salam, when she mentioned after he buried the Lady Fatima, and in mourning her and remembering that great lady. And it's interesting that in this hadith, the Imam alayhi salam, you know, he likens and equates the grief that he endured with the grief he endured at the demise of the Prophet, which reminds us of the famous prophetic hadith where the Prophet said, Fatima is a part of me and is the light of my eyes and the fruit of my heart. Right? So the Prophet kind of equated himself with her and said, affirmed the affinity between them. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at how Imam Ali alayhi salam mourned the Lady Fatima. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
It's night, dark and cold. I walk in the city alone in the crowd. Every street, every store is filled with colors and smiles as before. I know clouds are hidden behind these faces. Is there anyone who has a sunny heart? I put on my headphones and play the song, which repeats the enchanting whisper. I say, why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name? Like a storm, the sun stops and naked and back to the cold. A smiling face is on the screen, but there's no room in my burning heart for icy words. My clouds are hidden behind these faces. Is there anyone who has a sunny heart? I reject the call and again play the song, which repeats the enchanting whisper.
From beautiful Tehran, a heartfelt salam to each of you. You're tuned in Iran Radio, and I'm your host here to guide you through an enriching day of discovery and insight. Please settle in, What you'll hear today just might make your day brighter. We begin this hour with further radio productions. Then join us for Bridge, a brief commentary on profound supplications, hosted by Sheikh Mehdi Dardashtian. Bridge offers a brief commentary and presentation of the supplications of the Noble Book of Sahifa Sajjadiyah by Imam Sajjad, peace be upon him. Next, we open the door to Dialogue, hosted by Sayyid Shahriyar Naqvi. Dialogue is a look at the most important conversations and dialogues between Shia infallible imams with their followers, questioners, and leaders of different Islamic faith and sects on various religious topics and doctrines, and also political, social, and cultural issues. Following this, we'll feature more of our radio productions. Stay tuned. The next is another segment of our radio productions.
It's been a long time since her birthday. It's been a long time she asked her husband before her departure from this world that nobody should take part in her burial. We're going to know about the personality of her, the daughter of Allah's last messenger. This is like Fatima.
Peace be on you, O daughter of the Messenger of Allah. Peace be on you, O daughter of the Prophet of Allah. Peace be on you, O daughter of the dearest beloved of Allah.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum. Hello and welcome to our program about the life of the Honorable Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her. I am your host, Rashida Hanif. With me in the studio today is Ms. Zahra Musawi, who received her bachelor's degree from King's College in England and is now a teacher at the Islamic College for Women. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. How are you?
Welcome to our program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mrs. Zahra Musawi is here to share with us her research on the life of our dear Fatima Zahra. It's always nice to have you.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Last time we spoke of the passing of our Holy Prophet and the grievous effect that it had on our dear Fatima Zahra.
Yes.
And today we want to concentrate on one of the major problems to confront Fatima Zahra quite soon after the death of the Holy Prophet.
Yes.
And this is the whole situation surrounding Fadak.
Yes.
First of all, can you tell us what was Fadak?
Fadak is the name of a piece of land, a very, very large piece of land. Some say it was a village inside the Khaybar area in Hijaz, and some say it was a city in Hijaz. So this shows it was a large area, and it had many trees. It was very good land. It was like a big garden. And in those areas, a big garden was worth much. It had a huge outcome, a huge revenue each year.
Based on what? A revenue based on what?
They had fruits.
I see.
Had dates, the best of each kind.
Okay.
Which they could sell.
Okay.
Yes.
And why was this a problem then? What happened to Fadak?
Well, when the Prophet enters Khaybar, which is an area in Hijaz, he had to fight with those who betrayed him, those who broke their promise, and they were the Jews. They broke their promise. And he was victorious, and he conquered all the castles or forts, apart from three forts in this Khaybar area. Now, the Prophet, he put these three forts under siege. He besieged them and surrounded them for some time. It became difficult for the people who were living in these forts. And so, in the end, they decided to send a messenger or send a message to the Prophet saying, can we possibly leave the siege safely?
Okay,
and you do us no harm. Now, the Prophet, being a loving person, accepted. If it was anybody apart from the Prophet, they wouldn't have accepted because they broke their promise. They broke their vow. And when they were sure that the Prophet was, you know, he meant it, when they were sure that the Prophet meant it, and when they were touched by his kindness, they told the Prophet, we want to divide our fruits and our riches and our gardens into two halves. And we will give a half to you as a present to maintain peace.
Okay.
And to restore peace between us.
Okay.
And the Prophet accepted.
Okay.
So there were no wars or battles fought to gain Fedak.
So this is how Fedak came into the possession of the Holy Prophet.
Yes.
We're going to take a break.
And a law rendered prohibition from drinking wine because of taking distance from contaminations. And a law made refraining from theft for the sake of positiveness and affirmation for modesty.
Welcome back. And now, did Fedak come into the possession of the Holy Prophet himself, or was it for the general Muslims?
No. It wasn't for the general Muslims. It's a common misconception.
Now, can we consider this part of general war booty that is, belongs to all the Muslims and must therefore be divided up to all of them?
No. It's totally different.
Okay.
Now, because there was no bloodshed for this.
Okay.
And it was given as a present to the Prophet. It belonged to the Prophet only.
It was personal property then.
It was personal property.
Okay.
And in wars, when there was bloodshed, when people lost their lives, yes, the booty was divided between those who fought.
Okay.
But this is a different case. People started to question, why hasn't the Prophet given us our share of Fedak?
Mm-hmm.
Why hasn't he given us our share? And God sent down an ayah.
Mm-hmm.
He sent down a verse from the Holy Quran.
Okay.
It is Surah Hashr, verse 6 and 7. I'm going to read the first ayah, and then I'll just explain the second ayah.
Okay.
And it is, وَمَا أَفَاءَ اللَّهُ عَلَىٰ رَسُولِهِ مِنْهُمْ فَمَا أَوْجَفْتُمْ عَلَيْهِ مِنْ خَيْلٍ وَلَا رِكَابٍ وَلَكِنَّ اللَّهُ يُسَلِّطُ رُسُلَهُ عَلَىٰ مَنْ يَشَاءُ وَاللَّهُ عَلَىٰ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ قَدِيرٌ. And the translation of this verse is, and whatever Allah restored to his apostle from them, you did not press forward against it any horse riding or a camel. But Allah gives authority to his apostles against whom he pleases. And Allah has power over all things.
Okay. So this ayah is saying that there was no battle fought.
Yes.
And Allah has given this to the Holy Prophet himself.
Yes.
And do with as he pleases.
Exactly,
and Allah
yes.
has power to yes. do this. Basically.
And in the next ayah explains.
Okay.
And through these ayahs we understand that.
What does the next ayah say?
It explains that these lands, God, by putting fear in the hearts of the Jews, they gave this land without war to the Prophet.
Okay.
And so they belong to the Prophet and God to do with it what they please.
Mm-hmm.
These lands are God's and the Prophet. They do not belong to the believers. They do not because nobody fought for this war.
Right.
There was no bloodshed. So it belonged to the Prophet. I mean, this is an ayah in the Quran.
Yes.
If you question this, then you're questioning the Quran.
Right.
That means Fedak was something which personally belonged to the Prophet. He could do with it what he pleased.
Okay. And what did he please? What did he do with it?
Well, after Fedak was given to the Prophet, God sent down another ayah. He revealed another verse. And it says, فَآتِ ذَا الْقُرْبَى حَقَّهُ وَالْمِسْكِينَ وَابْنَ السَّبِيلِ ذَلِكَ خَيْرٌ لِلَّذِينَ يُرِيدُونَ وَجْهَ اللَّهِ وَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْمُفْلِحُونَ. Then give to the near of kin his due, and to the needy and the wayfarer. This is best for those who desire Allah's pleasure, and these it is who are successful.
Okay.
When Allah sent down this ayah, the first question you ask is, who are the next of kin?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody agrees, both Shias and both Sunnis, that the next of kin are the Prophet's household, Imam Ali alayhi salam, Fatima al-Zahra, Imam Hassan alayhi salam, and Imam Hussein alayhi salam. God is telling the Prophet, this land that you have, give it to Fatima.
For the next of the kin, okay.
Give it to Fatima al-Zahra. Now, the Prophet, he called Fatima,
mm-hmm.
and he told her, "My daughter, the word..."